ओम ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. By his will I create, Lord Shiva destroys, and he himself in his eternal form, as the personality of Godhead, maintains everything. He is the powerful controller of these three energies. So it appears as if Brahma is speaking and Lord Vishnu is being referred to. Purport. The conception of one without a second is clearly confirmed here. The one is Lord Vasudeva, and only by his different energies and expansions are different manifestations, both in the material and in the spiritual worlds, maintained in the material world also. Lord Vasudeva is everything, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita. Vasudeva sarva miti. Everything is Vasudeva only. In the Vedic hymns also the same. Vasudeva is held to be supreme. It is said in the Vedas, Vasudevat paro brahmana chanyor tosti tattvataha. In fact, there is no greater truth than Vasudeva. And Lord Krishna affirms the same truth in the Bhagavad Gita. Matah parataram nanyat, there is nothing above me, Lord Krishna. So the conception of oneness, as overly stressed by the impersonalist, is also accepted by the personalist devotee of the Lord. The difference is that the impersonalist denies personality in the ultimate issue, whereas the devotee gives more importance to the personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam explains this truth in the verse under discussion. Lord Vasudeva is one without a second, but because he is all-powerful, he can expand himself as well as display his omnipotencies. The Lord is described here as omnipotent by three energies, Trishakti Drik. So, primarily, his three energies are eternal, marginal, and external. This external energy is also displayed in the three modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. Similarly, the internal potency is also displayed in three spiritual modes, Samvit, Sandhini, and Haladini. The marginal potency, or the living entities, is also spiritual. Prakritiṃ viddhi me parām. But the living entities are never equal to the Lord. The Lord is nirasta samya atishaya. In other words, no one is greater than or equal to the Supreme Lord. So, the living beings, including even such great personalities as Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, are all subordinate to the Lord. In the material world also, in his eternal form of Lord of Vishnu, he maintains and controls all the affairs of the demigods, including Brahma and Shiva. Much of this second canto of Bhagavatam might seem very technical, but there are important lessons to be learned, which is why Vyasadeva has put them here within the Bhagavatam. This chapter is titled Purusha Sukta Confirmed. The topics here confirm those of the Purusha Sukta, which establish the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For those who have the understanding, there are others who will take Purusha Sukta as a description of a person who ultimately is not a person at all. That is a wrong understanding. The impersonalists means those who say that ultimately everything is impersonal. They are wrong. Now they may say, well, there are different perspectives, and any perspective is as good as another. But that is not the actual fact. There is reality as it is not subject to our estimation of it. We are not the arbiters of reality. Reality is as he is, not as it is. We may speculate on the nature of reality, but he is as he is. And we are subordinate to him. That is the fact. As Srila Prabhupada often made the point, especially in preaching to non-Hindus who don't accept Shastra, but he would bring them to the point of the teachings of Shastra by stressing or pointing out that no one can say they are independent. Everyone is controlled, which means that we are controlled by a person, because control is not impersonal. And so he established the existence of God in this way. And then, who is that person? You don't know, I know, Srila Prabhupada would say. If you don't know, you can't present. You say God, but you don't know who God is, I will tell you, that is Krishna. If you can find anyone who better fits the description of God, then you can suggest them. But we don't find anyone better. So Prabhupada insisted that you should accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is the ultimate and actually only teaching of all the Vedas, but which both Vedic scholars, so-called, try to avoid, and which persons who have no contact with the Vedas, when brought in touch with it, try to reject as in various ways. They may try to reject or ignore, but Srila Prabhupada was insistent that this is the fact and you should accept it. If you don't, you're simply a rascal. There's something seriously wrong with you if you don't accept this. Namang duskriyo murha prapadyante naratamaha maya parita jnana asurang bhavamashita. Persons, Krishna said, who do not surrender to me, they're all rascals. Dushkriti means rascal. Means someone who is maybe very expert at performing various activities, but their motive and their activities are all badly motivated. They're badly motivated. There are various words in Bhagavad Gita. Durmatihi, people whose inclination is bad or wrong. So in Mayavad, it's all peace, love, be happy, embrace each other, everything's nice, everything's wonderful. But it's not. It's not that everything is nice and wonderful. Krishna is nice and wonderful. Krishna consciousness is nice and wonderful. Devotees of Krishna are nice and wonderful. But those who do not accept Krishna, they're envious of Krishna. Even if they speak of love, peace, harmony, bliss, wonderful, beautiful, etc., etc., because they avoid Krishna. They're simply envious. There's Ravindra Swarup Prabhu wrote a Bhakti Godhead article many years ago about how, as he was temple president in Philadelphia, which he still is, must be the longest serving temple president in the movement, a devotee resident in that temple came up to him and pointed out that all over the city had been plastered posters of some bogus Mayavadi. Means Mayavadi. So it's just like, you know, Mayavadi means bogus, but sometimes you say bogus just to emphasize the point. Just like you say Sadguru. Guru means Sat. If he's not Sat, then he's not a guru. But sometimes it's usually all the people they call sadgurus are bogus also. But they try to establish them by attaching that prefix. Sat means genuine. If he's actually sat, you don't have to say sat. A guru is a guru is a guru. He's either a guru or not a guru. So this bogus Mayavadi was this. The new devotee in the temple insisted to Ravindra Swarup Prabhu that you have to go and do something about it. This person's going to contaminate everything in the whole city. So Ravindra Swarup went, and then Swami 1008 Bogus Ananda, whoever he might have been. They're actually not even Swamis, the ones, I think it was, anyway, there's this Guru Maharaj Ji who made his millions and retired back to Himachal Pradesh. So he gave his spiel, and then it was time for questions. And Ravindra Sarup asked, I can't remember exactly it was, but some question which was challenging, like, well, if you say you are God, then how come you have such an ugly face, or something. Something like that. I don't know exactly what the question was. And it was like there was a whole mood, this mood of love, peace, everything's wonderful, was marred by his question. Someone turned around and said, you're disturbing the vibes, man. So it's just a false feeling that everything is nice and wonderful, but avoiding Bhakti Siddhanta. I was asked to speak here on Bhakti Siddhanta. There's nothing else that we should ever speak on at any time except Bhakti Siddhanta. So that Krishna is supreme. We are not supreme. This Bhakti Siddhanta defies this envious idea, which superficially might seem very nice. Well, just love, feel love for everyone, feel yourself as the cosmic oneness, but you are not the cosmic oneness. However much you may imagine yourself to be, however much you may sit on the side of, what's this, that hill called? Tentul Hill. Anyway, whatever it is, I'm not good at pronouncing Gaelic, whatever. You can sit on the hill and, you know, these Mayavadis, sometimes they think, I am making the sunrise. Great, go and do it. We need some around here. Can they do it? The Mayavadis, they think they're controlling the universe. Okay, get out there on the hill and tell the sun to come up and give us some nice sunshine instead of freezing here in this cold and wind and rain. But they can't do it. They may imagine I am the supreme controller, but they have to suffer the cold and the wind and the rain if they happen to be in Scotland on May the 28th. Oh, I'm running ahead in time. See, I'm not God. Oh, it's revealed. I don't even know what the date is. I'm not all-knowing. So they can imagine they're the supreme controller, but it's simply imagination. Yeah, there's God. He's the real one. Actually, two of them. How about that? We're monotheistically worshipping two gods. That's a bit high for the Mayava. There are not many gods. There's a black one down there too. So this is, we're insisting there is one God.
That's our two kids over there.
We're insisting there's one God, only one, and then we're worshipping him in many forms. So this is, may seem very difficult. Yeah, it is difficult for people who are stupid. Otherwise, it's not difficult, because it's actually not difficult to understand, but we all happen to be stupid. That's why we're in the material world. Actually, although it's nothing very difficult to understand, it's difficult to understand because we don't want to understand. That's all. Because we are duskriti, murha. We are sinful rascals, fools. We want to be foolish. We're determinedly foolish. Otherwise, it's not difficult to understand. Brahma, he understands. This verse which we read today is spoken by Lord Brahma. He understands that I create, but how do I create? By his will. This is the translation. By his will. I create. In the modern Western world, creativity is considered a great quality. Art means to be creative. You do something new. Some new style of art, new style of music, new style of dressing. Although it's difficult to find so many things new. Fashion means they're just rehash. They just go round and round in circles. That for some time they do 1920s style, then they do 1960s style, then they do 1930s style. They just go round and round in circles. Present the latest summer collection. And art, well, it's difficult to find anything new to do. Actually, talking about Philadelphia, was it Philadelphia? I think it was last year, somewhere. It was last year in America. And I was surprised to see there was a big, impressive-looking building. I mean, not 100 stories high, but more like a European building, traditional European building. So it looked very nice, and the whole city is very nice and clean. And there's a whole bunch of garbage out the front. And I thought, oh, that's very strange, how the city council is giving this whole bunch of garbage out the front. Then I saw the sign, it's a modern art museum. That was an exhibit of modern art. That's a good excuse, isn't it? You can just pile your garbage out the front, and then when the corporation complains, you say, oh, it's artistic expression. See, you're impinging on our rights. We have this artistic expression. So creativity is considered very, it's almost sacred. You see, in the name of creativity, you can have very vulgar things, and in the name of free expression, you can insult everyone upside down, inside out, back to front, which they... So this creativity is considered a great quality in the modern age. But Brahma, who's the greatest creator, he says, by his will, I create. And in Vedic culture, it's just the opposite, that adherence to the authorities, that is considered the proper standard. There's so many artists, but they just produce the same things over and over again. Each year, for the pujas, the form of Ganesh, well, nowadays they're getting a bit avant-garde, but it should be in a particular form. Deity should be in... There may be different forms of the deity. Like for Nrisimha, there are various forms. Yoga Nrisimha, Ugra Nrisimha. But those forms, they are to a specific standard, to be done in a particular way, and to execute in the same way that has been done for generations, that is considered the perfection, that one is able to follow well. Whereas in the modern age, it's considered a quality to try to do something original and different, to show one's own ability. But Brahma understands, by his will, I create. Lord Shiva destroys. And he himself, in his eternal form as the personality of Godhead, maintains everything. So this is Purusha Sukta confirmed. From the Purusha, from the original Purusha, so many forms come. But there's one original, and that is Krishna. The Mayavadis, they generally, in the Bhagavad Gita, they like the 11th chapter because it describes so many different forms. Krishna shows so many different forms, and they think, oh, just see, Krishna represents all the other different gods. But that's not what is the purpose of Krishna showing the Vishvarup. He shows the Vishvarup, the universal form, to show the point which he's just made to Arjuna, that aham sarvasya prabhavo mahtah savam prabhatate. Everything comes from me. To make the point that mataparataram nanyat kinchidasti dhananjaya. Mai sarvamidam, what is that? Mai sarvamidam sarvam sutra manigana eva. That no one is superior to me. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung on a thread. A pearls are strung on a thread means we don't see the thread, just like your neck beads. You don't see the thread, but we understand there is a thread, because if there wasn't a thread, the beads wouldn't be suspended round our necks like this. So we don't see the thread, but it's obvious that there is a thread. So in the same way, we may not see Krishna holds everything, but he holds everything by his energies. So Krishna exhibited that to Arjuna, but that doesn't mean that Krishna is representing all these forms or that they're all equal to him. Rather, that he is the source of those forms, and when he wants, he demonstrated them all at one place to Arjuna, and then when Arjuna asked for that vision to be withdrawn, Krishna showed his original form, two-handed form of Krishna. So everything is to be understood through Bhakti Siddhanta. I see I'm speaking on Bhakti Siddhanta. We normally never speak anything Bhakti Siddhanta, which is non-different from Bhakti Vedanta. It means that just, of course, it's a different, slightly different perspective, but ultimately it means the same thing. That one who has the spirit of bhakti, he can understand all these points very well. And those who do not have the spirit of bhakti, even though they study all the scriptures for many, many years, they won't find the truth. They may be very learned, but they don't find the actual reality. Who is Krishna? The reality of Krishna's supremacy and our subordination to him. Now, in this purport, Srila Prabhupada states that the conception of oneness is overly stressed by the impersonalist, but it's also accepted by the personalist. So oneness is true in one sense. If we say that we are one with God, it's not untrue. In one sense, it's true. If there was absolute difference between the Supreme Personality of Godhead and everyone and everything else, then there would be no meeting ground. There could be no relationship. There could be no dialogue. If we were completely different in all respects, then there would be no way of communion. So we are one with God in the sense that we are of the same nature. The same nature. He is Satyarananda, we are Satyarananda. He is eternal. He is by nature eternal, full of knowledge, or he is conscious and blissful. And we are also by nature eternal, conscious and blissful. But he is supreme and he is the source of everything. And we are dependent. So that is the difference. Srila Prabhupada writes here that the concept of oneness is not, in one sense, is not wrong. But it's when you try to establish oneness as that is the ultimate principle without understanding the difference, then it becomes a very serious problem. Which is why Srila Prabhupada was, as a typical Vaishnava Acharya, it's not that Prabhupada was unique in this respect, but rather he followed in the tradition of all Vaishnava Acharyas. One of the main symptoms of a Vaishnava Acharya, Vaishnava Acharya means Vaishnava. But we say Vaishnava, if one is not a Vaishnava, one cannot be an Acharya, because Acharya means one, Tattvadarshi, one who sees the truth. He can reveal the truth. So the truth is Krishna. If you don't know Krishna, then how can you be an Acharya? But sometimes we say that Vaishnava Acharya to distinguish between others who are falsely called Acharyas. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he used the term Acharya in relation to Shankara. Shankara Acharya, we generally said Shankara Acharya, who is the most prominent impersonalist of the modern age. The modern age means Kali Yuga, and it's not the last 20 years. So, even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used that term, Acharya, Inasmuch as Shankara, he explained the Vedas, and he was extremely influential. But in the true sense of the term, Shankara, as he taught, of course, he is Shiva, so he is an Acharya, Vaishnava Acharya. But as he taught as Shankara, Shankaracharya, who is called Adi Shankaracharya, his teachings are misleading. So in the true sense of the term, he's not an Acharya. A real Acharya is a Vaishnava. So the Vaishnava Acharyas, it's a prominent symptom of an Acharya, and especially a preacher, is that a major part of his mission is to oppose Mayavad. He doesn't tolerate it. Rupa Anoga Virudha Apasiddhanta Dvanta Hari Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is the remover of the darkness of the wrong conclusions, those which oppose the teachings of Rupa Goswami, the core of whose teachings are Anyabhilashita Shunyam Jnana Kama Dhyana Vritam Anukubhyena Krishna Nushilanam Bhakti Rutama. Rupa Goswami taught that one is to cultivate bhakti, the highest level of bhakti, that which is not covered by karma or jnana. Jnana here refers to the impersonalist tendency of those who think that by cultivating jnana, knowledge, that we shall become one with everything. So in that sense, jnana is rejected. Although actual jnana is always accepted. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Jnani Tvat Maiva Me Matam. The Jnani is, well, the impersonalist would interpret this to say the Jnani is me. But the Jnani is most dear to me. Udara Sarva Evaite Jnani Tvat Maiva Me Matam. So the Jnani is accepted. But then elsewhere Krishna says, Bahunam Janmanamante Jnanavan Mang Prapadyate. After many, many lifetimes only, the Jnani surrenders to me. So the word is Jnan and Jnani are used in different places, even within one thesis, the Bhagavad Gita, short thesis, used in different places in different contexts in different ways. Therefore, it requires an Acharya to explain all these things. So the Vaishnava Acharyas, they must stand against the impersonalists whose misunderstandings have caused havoc in the spiritual life of the world. And that's what Shankaracharya came for, because he's Lord Shiva and he oversees Tamaguna. He oversees that which is destructive and inauspicious in human society. That's his function. It may seem like a very strange function, but someone has to do it, because that's the nature of the material world is always tending toward chaos and destruction and disharmony, because it is the opposite of the spiritual world. People have come here to forget Krishna, so they must suffer in this material world. We may say, why does God punish us? Well, we choose that because once we're disconnected from Krishna, we must suffer. We can only suffer because suffering means to be disconnected from Krishna. And that manifests as birth, death, old age, disease, adhyatmik, adhibhautik, adhidaivik, various clans, jhanas of miseries, manifests as the cold and the wind and the rain in Scotland. It's not the worst thing, but it's not pleasant. There are more unpleasant things, but these are all varieties of suffering. So Lord Shiva, he oversees all of that. And the philosophy that he teaches as Shankara simply creates confusion, illusion, immense pride in the persons who, with actually amazing gumption, that they presume themselves to be God. I am God. I'm just some totally insignificant person. But many people believe that. They're convinced that I am God and I am one with everything. And so Shankara, he comes to establish that. And the Vaishnavas, they come to smash that, following Lord Nityananda. Prem Pracharan A Pashanda Dalan Dui Karje Abadhuta Karen Brahman. Nityananda Prabhu traveled for preaching Prem, love of Krishna, and subduing the atheists. Srila Prabhupada translates this. Pashanda Dalan. Srila Prabhupada translates this as subduing the atheists. So for these two purposes, Nityananda Prabhu moved in the world. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally subdued or changed the minds of two of the most prominent impersonalists in India at that time, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Prakashananda Saraswati, by demonstrating to them that their understanding of Vedanta was completely wrong. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, actually, Vedanta, it's completely clear and obvious what it says, but it becomes obscure by your interpretations. If you just take it as it is, it's all very clear. So Srila Prabhupada, he gave this title to his edition of Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavad Gita as it is. And I remember when I first saw that, I thought, that's a very strange title. And why is it called Bhagavad Gita as it is? If it's Bhagavad Gita, it's Bhagavad Gita. If it's not Bhagavad Gita, it's not Bhagavad Gita. It's like, you know, why as it is? It's just like if you go to the grocery stores. Do any such things still exist? Grocery stores? They're all supermarkets. They still have them, huh? They still have them, okay. So, and you pick up an apple, and the grocer says, it's a real apple. I guarantee it's a genuine apple. Well, you know, that's what I thought it was. It's an apple, it's an apple, it's an apple. Why should you think it's anything else? But then after reading Bhagavad Gita as it is, I understood that Prabhupada called it that because everything else with the title of Bhagavad Gita is not Bhagavad Gita. It's the words of Krishna with the malinterpretation of others. So that it comes in, Krishna says, and then Krishna, it is not unto the person Krishna that one has to surrender, but to the unborn within Krishna, says the rascal commentator. Oh, Krishna says one thing, and the commentator, instead of explaining what that thing means, says that, well, actually, Krishna got it wrong. You know, maybe it was a slip of the tongue, or, you know, he couldn't quite get it right, but, you know. But anyway, never mind, I'm here to sort it all out for you, and this is what Krishna actually should have said. So this is all rascal. It's a very simple word. I mean, we may say that word many times. Of course, it's not that fashionable these days, but it's still the fact hasn't changed that simply by imagining people are not rascals, they don't cease to be rascals. And in fact, imagining people not to be rascals is another form of rascaldom, because it goes against what Krishna says. Namang dushkrishin omurha prapadyante naradama maya parita jnana asurang bhavam ashrita. So the Vaishnava acharyas, they demonstrate their fidelity to Krishna by repeating what Krishna says and very mercifully pointing out, more for the benefit of persons who are not as rascal as the prominent rascals, more for their benefit, that persons who do not, who defy Krishna, they are simply rascals. So those who are simply rascals, they're not so likely to change. But persons who are misled by them, they may understand the point. Because if we consider, we are not supreme. We are not supreme means that we're under higher power. That means that we're not God. And we never will be God, because if we were God, then we wouldn't be in this mess in the first place. We don't know who we are, what the purpose of life is, where we've come from, where we're going to. We're trying to be happy in various ways, but we're not happy. We're totally bewildered. Therefore, anyone who says that we are God is simply misleading us. And although it may sound very nice to us, it is absolutely against our actual benefit to imagine that. Because we can never be God. We're definitely not God. And to imagine that is it's gross foolishness. Because however much we may imagine and we may say love, bliss, light, harmony, wonderful, beautiful, and all these words that Mayavadis like to spout, which are not bad words, but they only have their meaning in relationship to Krishna, not in relationship to some imagined oneness or without Krishna. So, by pointing this out, that we are subordinate to the Supreme, who must be a person, and that person is Krishna. And persons who cover that with their misleading explanations, they're actually enemies of human society. They may seem to be very nice people. They're vegetarians, some of them, most of them, I guess. Not the Dalai Lama. He's a big gluttonous meat eater, eats lots of meat every day and talks of peace. And people think he's very saintly. Just see how foolish people are. So by pointing this out, it may disturb the vibes, as that girl said to Ravindra Swarup. But the vibes in this material world, it's a dance party marching into hell in the name of spirituality. Feeling spirit, being spiritual doesn't just mean to feel spiritual, but being spiritual means very specifically and clearly surrendering to Krishna. Anything but that is not spiritual, because we are spiritual living beings. Krishna is the supreme spiritual being. Our constitutional position is to surrender to Krishna. And that places us in our spiritual position. And if we don't do that, we're not in the spiritual position. However much we may feel spiritual, that's just another phase of illusion, because spiritual existence has a specific meaning, not an imagined, vague, fuzzy meaning. So the Vaishnava, Srila Prabhupada, that point I was making, Srila Prabhupada was a typical Vaishnava Acharya, inasmuch as he was strongly against Mayavad. And his first followers, if you could call them that, in New York, they weren't really followers at that time, but they thought, I read this book recently of Mukunda Goswami, Miracle on Second Avenue, and afterward I spoke with Umapati about this, because he was there, he's one of the stars in the, and because Mukunda Maharaj now, that his book, it was more candid than any memory of Srila Prabhupada that I've read. And he was dealing with a period where people who are coming to Prabhupada, they didn't treat him with the same awe and reverence as later comers came. To him, to them, Prabhupada was interesting, but they didn't feel a sense of surrender to him, or they didn't think of him as a perfect person. This I discussed it more with Uma, because I was quite surprised reading Mukunda. Mukunda was just being very frank about everything. And one point that this Prabhupada was always, Swamiji at that time, was always talking about the impersonalists and the Mayavadis. They thought it was kind of quaint that this Swami, he's here in New York, he hasn't really keyed into New York and what's going on here. He's got this ongoing rivalry with some people back in India. And what's he got to do with us? You know, but they thought it was, you know, kind of cute. Part of being, you know, the Swami is his own, he's himself and he's being himself and all this and that. Until the revelation, which is, I think this is all my favorite Prabhupada Leela. I put it in my Vyasa Puja offering this year. In the course of reading Dr. Radha Krishnan's Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada had translated Bhagavad Gita himself prior to coming to the West, but his manuscript was stolen. And it's what a major, I mean, anyone who's done that kind of work and to go to the trouble to make a translation and commentary and then it's just lost. And can imagine what a big obstacle. And, I mean, lesser people would have been totally discouraged and would have just retired from any such activity. So Srila Prabhupada was using Dr. Radha Krishnan's edition, and he said the translations are more or less correct, but the problem comes in the commentary. And Srila Prabhupada said later about his own commentaries that the commentary is the most important part, not the verse. It's interesting, isn't it? Because the verse can't be understood without the commentary. So anyway, they were reading through and they came to the last verse of chapter 9. Manmana bhavamad bhakto madhyaji mang namaskaru mame vaishya. See, what's the next word? No, yuktvaivam atmanam matparayanaha. It's almost the same as the verse at the end, which is more often quoted, in which Krishna says, always think of me, become my devotee, bow down to me, worship me, being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. So Prabhupada, he said, he read the commentary of Dr. Radha Krishnan that it is not to the person Krishna that one has to surrender, but to the eternal unborn within Krishna. And Prabhupada said, see, I told you he was a rascal. This is, he's espousing this. So then Keith, who was later to be initiated as Kirtanananda, he protested and said, well, you know, what's wrong? And he went, Keith went on a long spiel himself, quoting all kinds of authorities who, quoting from St. John of the Cross and Shankara and some Chinese people and this and that. He was well read in all kinds of Mayavad. And then he stopped and Swamiji said, Swamiji was sitting on the dais looking very grave, getting redder and redder and redder. And then he said, then he asked Keith, have you finished? And he hadn't. And he went on more, talking about the one that we're all part of and the cosmic oneness and this and that. Then again Prabhupada asked, have you finished? And then Keith said yes. And then Prabhupada, they'd never seen him like this before, he roared that it is not one, it is Krishna. Why do you deny Krishna? Krishna states here that it is to me you have to surrender. And all the great acharyas, they accept it. There is no oneness. We have to surrender to Krishna. He is the supreme controller. Why do you deny him? Why are you envious of Krishna? Prabhupada is roaring like a lion. And they were completely shocked. You know, they didn't expect Swamis to be like that. And then Wali, that's Umapati, said to Howard, who was higher griever, that he really got angry, didn't he? And Howard said, yeah, but the point he's making is true, isn't it? It's that Krishna says to surrender to him. And you would have never understood it unless you'd have heard from Prabhupada. And they said, yeah, it's true. And then they realized that the Mayavadis Prabhupada had been talking about all that time was them. It wasn't someone in India. It wasn't just that Swamiji was he had this trip about some people he didn't like in India. It was them. You are the Mayavadi. We are all the Mayavadis. We are all denying. As much as we don't surrender to Krishna, it means we're attached to the idea of being separate from Krishna, which is Mayavad. One definition of Mayavad is to see everything as all one. And another, in one place, Srila Prabhupada defines, or says the symptom of Mayavadi is that he thinks that there's anything separate from Krishna. Because if we think that there's anything separate from Krishna, we're denying Krishna's supremacy over everything. Or that Krishna, he is the overlord of everything. So that is the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. That is the actual fact that we have come to understand. Absolute is personal. Thou hast proved. Impersonal calamity thou hast removed. When Srila Prabhupada showed, or when this poem was showed to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he very much appreciated this. He thought that he has understood my mission. So it's essential that if we are to maintain our position as followers of Srila Prabhupada and as Vaishnavas, that we... A Vaishnava means that he's always opposed to impersonalism. He cannot tolerate this envy of Krishna represented as impersonalism. How, and in fact, the niceness and the sweetness and the smiling, it's all it's all manifestations of envy of Krishna. And that comes out in various forms. The idea that everyone is God, and then in India that manifests as all kinds of bogus incarnations, because it's thought that, well, anyone who's self-realized, they're God. So anyone who declares themselves realized, they become God. And they're all, I mean, it's just so many, especially from South India at the moment, there are all kinds of new incarnations coming up all the time. One recently, Nityananda Paramahamsa. He had a short time as God, and then he was exposed for... he was caught on film having some kissing with some Tamil film star, and that finished him off for the time being. But he's making a comeback. And then Jaggi Vasudev, and all kinds of, you know, nasty people coming out who... they're just nothing, but they get someone... they get some rich sponsor. What it is that all these ministers in the government have so much black money, that, and they launder their money through these bogus gurus and spiritual institutions, and that way the bogus gurus, they get rich and they come up in the world quick, and they become bona fide avatars very quickly thanks to black money. So we're told. So there are so many of these bogus avatars, but we have to understand from Shastra. Now, people may claim. It may sound very good, but it's bogus. In Gujarat, there's the only known to Gujarati, Sahajanand Swami, who is actually a devotee of Radha and Krishna. He declares in his writings, he's a devotee of Radha and Krishna, but his followers declare him to be God himself. And it used to be in their temples, they'd have the image of Swaminarayan and then Vishnu or Radha Krishna in the middle. And then they moved Swaminarayan in the middle. And now, the latest, most popular branch, they practically forgot Swaminarayan altogether, and they promote this Prakat Brahmit Swarup, or whatever it is, they promote the Brahma Swarup, but Brahmit means mistaken, so I deliberately mispronounced it. So, like this, they promote the person they falsely made into an avatar. They put him on the side, and it's now the latest guru who broke away, whose guru broke away from the original Bhoga Sampradaya in the first place. And they make him the guru. And this is called Guru Maravidya. It's the Mayavadi idea. That you learn everything from your guru, then you don't need him. So you just kill him and make yourself the guru. And why just be a guru and be God? There's so many wrong ideas. So we should clearly understand from Srila Prabhupada. Why do we say Srila Prabhupada? Is it our own sectarianism? No, because he presents the message of Shastra as it is. And we understand that he gives us the clear commentary. And it's we can understand, we coming from the West, we don't have any cultural fidelity to Shastra. Why should we accept Shastra? Why should we accept Srimad Bhagavatam over the Bible? Because it gives clear knowledge of the absolute truth. We can Bhagavad Gita is presented intelligently to Arjuna, and to Krishna doesn't say, look, you just accept me, Arjuna, or else I'm going to roast you in hell forever. But he gives him, he explains point by point. So, Srila Prabhupada explained, just like there is a supreme controller, we cannot deny, we are controlled. We should accept that. It's not illogical to accept that. In fact, it's illogical not to accept it. So, by the combination of citing Shastra as the main authority and giving clear explanations that are not, strained, or the idea that we are one with everything, you can't demonstrate it. You can only feel it in your imagination. But that we are controlled, which is the actual proper understanding, it's easily demonstrable in every facet of our life, at every moment of our life. We can only imagine that we are one with everything, but we can experience and observe at every moment how we are controlled. So what Prabhupada said makes sense. It's based on Shastra, which makes sense. The first verse of Bhagavatam gives more knowledge of reality than all the other books in the world put together, including the Vedic books. So we accept it on that basis. We are not supreme. We are control. The supreme controller is Krishna. Surrender to him and join him in an eternal life of blissful dancing, singing, eating, kissing. These are the activities of Krishna. But if we think that we're one with God, then we're cheated of all that. So we should oppose all these rascal Mayavadis, as Srila Prabhupada did. If we're to be followers of Prabhupada, then we have to do what he did. This is, he defined his own mission, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshachane, to defy these rascals who deny Krishna. So we should do that also. If it's only Prem Pracharan, preaching Prem, without the Pashanda Dalam, without combating the atheists and demons and rascals and Mayavadis, then it will become Prakriti Sahajya, simply, cheaply, without. Then it'll be all just like the Mayavadis, all feelings, nice, oh, you're so wonderful, you're so great, but no real substance of service to Krishna by opposing those who oppose Krishna. Hare Krishna. Any question, comment, or protest, please. Protest especially welcome.
Are
Brahmavadis complementary to Vaishnavism? Not really complementary, and not really around these days either. The Brahmavadis of the type of the four Kumaras, where are they nowadays? People who are sincere but not informed. Where are they? They're not there. Anything else? Yes. Bhaja Govinda? Well, that's the point, because he is Lord Shiva, who is a great Vaishnava, but he was deputed by Narayana to spread this wrong idea to enhance the effect of Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga means everyone who's born in Kali Yuga, apart from all of you who are devotees, we're born in Kali Yuga because we have these bad propensities, sinful propensities. So to create that atmosphere, Shankara introduced this philosophy, which is very auspicious. Mayavadam asach chastram prachandam buddhamuchyate mayaiva kalpita devi kalo brahmana rupina. This Lord Shiva tells his wife that mayavad is asat shastra, or an improper understanding or representation of shastra. It is covered Buddhism. And Buddhism, although it has a good name in the world today, in Vedic culture to say Buddhism it's like a pejorative term. It's defiant of the Vedas. Prachandam buddhamuch, it is something imaginary. Mayaiva kalpita. So he preaches that in Kali Yuga in the form of a brahmana to mislead people. And then the Vaishnava acharyas come and smash it. Ramanuja, Madhva. So in that sense, it provides a platform. Shankara, he systematically presented the canker, which is in everyone's mind, of thinking, I am God. So he systematically presented that. And then the Vaishnava acharyas, they point by point smashed it and proved that Krishna, or they would say Vishnu, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The first translations of the Vedanta Sutra commentaries were done in this series beginning in the 19th century by Max Müller. The sacred books of the East, they translated. And it wasn't Max Müller himself, it's someone else who translated the... First of all, he translated the commentary of Vedanta Sutra with the commentary of Shankara, Sharirika Bhasha. And then later he translated Ramanuja Sri Bhasha. So Shankara's is impersonalistic and Ramanuja's is theistic, establishes Vishnu as supreme. And the translator, in his preface to Ramanuja's edition, or his translation, he said that actually Ramanuja's commentary, it follows much more naturally than Shankara's, which is strained or convoluted. Shankara starts off with some philosophy and tries to fit the Vedanta into that, whereas Ramanuja's is a much more natural commentary. And when he published this, the translator, he got so many letters of protest from intellectuals in India. Then in the next book he published, this translator said that, I'm intellectually neutral. I was just making an intellectual. I'm not committed to this philosophy or that philosophy, but as an intellectually neutral statement that Ramanuja's commentary is a natural commentary. And I got so many letters, but I wasn't talking about whether Shankara's philosophy is better or Ramanuja's philosophy is better. I was just commenting on making a comment about their two different commentaries. Which philosophy is better or not, that's not my business, but it's clear to me that Ramanuja's commentary is a natural commentary. Well, that's an interesting aside. Yes?
Through your lecture, you were
In the West, we're affected by Mayavad. In the East, people are affected by Mayavad. In the North, in the South, in the Northeast, Southwest, everywhere. In the heavenly planets, in the hellish planets, everywhere.
You don't realize the effect that Mayavadis are preaching.
You don't?
Well, we think like that, but actually,
Well, I mean, all this New Age stuff is Mayavad cubed or something.
Is it even the?
Did
you see the Hindu Krishna's as pure Lord as Mayavad?
To some extent, yes. The theistic traditions of the West, well, which basically means Christianity in its various forms, it is affected by impersonalism in several ways. One way is that it's been, previously there was a conception of God being a person with the Father, that Sistine Chapel picture, the old man, nasty old man, looking down with an angry look on his face. So at least there was some personal idea, although not, didn't. Then, now, they're also apparently personal in as much as they accept Jesus as God, but that's actually Mayavad, because he's a jiva. And to accept a jiva as Bhagavan is Mayavad. And their whole religion, the whole basis of Christian religion is that Jesus died on the cross to redeem our sins. But it's actually a very offensive idea. If you think he's God and that someone can kill him, well, that's Mayavad, isn't it? That you can kill God. And then the fact that they don't really have any, even if they have a vague idea of him being a person, they don't really know who he is at all. They say you're supposed to love this person, but you don't know what he looks like, what his name is, where he lives, what he does, what he eats for breakfast, what he dresses like, who his friends are, how you can contact him. What are you left with? There's nothing there. So it may be apparently personal, but it comes to impersonal through lack of proper understanding. It's not classic Mayavad of Shankara. It's not that philosophically developed. I mean, the original teachings of Christ and in the Bible that we receive, there's not much philosophy at all. Whatever philosophy came into Christianity, and they made some massive blunders, just like this. That came later with all this Augustine and Aquinas and all these. They mostly borrowed from the Greeks, and they didn't even get the best stuff out of the Greeks. So it's really, I mean, philosophically, it's really a mess. We don't have to go around telling this in public. Well, maybe, I don't know, Prabhupada, he was quite cautious about this, but my feeling is it's maybe not a bad idea to throw that caution out now, because here in the West also, you can speak with people and say, look, Christianity is just a big mistake, and many people already understand that anyway. It's just based, it's a 2,000-year-old series of mistakes. There are some good things there, no doubt, but they got some things very seriously wrong. Just like the soul is only, well, that we're created and we only have one life, and then you either get it right or you get it wrong. If you get it wrong, that's it, no more chance. They don't understand the transmigration of the soul. And karma. They don't know what the soul is. Very strange ideas, only in the human body. Women got souls. When was that? A few hundred years ago. The first Christian women, they weren't souls. I don't know what they were. I guess they were like cows or something. At least they didn't eat the women. They ate the cows, because they don't have, the animals are there, they don't have souls, they're just for us to eat. Well, they didn't eat the women, but they awarded them souls, I think, how long ago? 700 years ago or something like that? I'm not sure exactly. So, you know, some serious mistakes. I mean, really, very, very ignorant, actually. Very, very ignorant. By distributing Srila Prabhupada's books, people who are thoughtful, and there aren't many of them, but people who are somewhat thoughtful, they can, immediately see that this is much higher knowledge than anything in Christian religious traditions. Our book distributors in Italy, before the orders came from the Vatican, not to, they would go in town to town, village to village. The first place they would always go to would be the church, the monastery, the nunnery, because they'd always take the books, and sometimes the priest would call them in and have them preach to the congregation on Sunday. One devotee told me that one priest called me in and introduced me to all the people in the church and said, these people, they know much more than I do. Because he understood from reading Prabhupada's books. And but then apparently some orders came from the Vatican. Hey, get in line. Madan Mohan from Russia told me that one Russian Orthodox priest or monk, I can't remember, told me, said that all the Russian Orthodox priests and monks and whatever who are actually interested in God, most of them, and it seems not that much interested, but they're all reading Prabhupada's books. They can't say so openly, but they're all reading Prabhupada's books, and they know that it's got far more substance than anything in their own tradition. So to distribute Prabhupada's books. But also, it is essential that not only do we distribute the books, but we have to speak what's in the books also. That's also required. Because if we don't, then that is a method of interpreting. By not speaking what's in the books, then new people come. And if we don't speak as Prabhupada spoke, then they're going to think that, well, actually, Prabhupada said that, but is no longer relevant. Or we'll think like the earlier followers of 26 Second Avenue thought, that Prabhupada's speaking something, which is something, it's just his trip. It's not relevant to us. So we have to speak what's in the books also, not try and change it. It's a heavy duty to speak what's in Prabhupada's books, because practically at every line, Prabhupada goes against everything that people who are considered normal, respectable people accept. I mean, there wouldn't be any reason for Prabhupada to state it unless it was something different from what... He's not teaching us what we already know. Prabhupada's not teaching us 2 plus 2 equals 4. He's not teaching that. He's not teaching that London is the capital of England, or is it Britain still, or what? Anyway, what's the capital of Scotland? Edinburgh? Yeah, they made the parliament there, did they? Yeah, it was always the capital. So he's not teaching things like that. He's teaching Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We're all his servants. And apart from that, which might be considered religious points, he's also teaching many things which now in the modern age might be considered politically incorrect. Prabhupada was very insistent on the socially subordinate position of women, which we don't like to talk about nowadays, but Prabhupada spoke about it regularly. Prabhupada spoke about first-class men, second-class men, third-class men, fourth-class men, which goes against all modern notions of egalitarianism. But Prabhupada was insistent on these points. So we should also continue to speak these points in the way that Srila Prabhupada did, with all understanding, not just ramming it down fanatically, but presenting it as Prabhupada did. Women are subordinate because by nature's law they have children. Men don't, and then they have to look after the children, and therefore they require to take shelter of a man. It's Prabhupada explained all these things. So we should too. We shouldn't shy away from it because people might not like it. Definitely they're not going to like it, but they're not going to get the right point unless we speak it. Even if it's in Prabhupada's books, if we don't speak it, that is in one way minimizing Srila Prabhupada's message. Hare Krishna. I'll finish.